Good afternoon, Tri-States. This is IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by Tupaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. This is Ken down here in not-quite-so-cold Missouri, reading from the Friday, January 19th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And now we have our first piece from the top of the fold. Woman found dead, son charged with murder. Police said a Dubuque man has been arrested on a charge of first-degree murder in connection with the death of his mother. Tyler J. Daisy, 28, of 1605 Avoca Street, was arrested Thursday morning on the charge and was being held at the Dubuque County Jail Thursday afternoon, according to Dubuque Police Department Lieutenant Brendan Welsh. Welsh said police responded to the Avoca address at about 8:50 a.m. Thursday for the report of a deceased woman at the residence. Upon arrival, they located and identified the decedent, Jennifer A. Daisy, 46, of the same address. "Anytime we have a death of an unknown nature, we treat it as a suspicious death," Welsh told the Telegraph Herald. During this investigation, investigators determined they had probable cause to arrest Tyler for first-degree murder. Tyler Daisy, Jennifer Daisy's son, was on the scene when officers arrived and was taken to the Dubuque Law Enforcement Center for an interview before his subsequent arrest, Welsh said. Officers remained on the scene for several hours afterward to process evidence and canvass for potential witnesses. Welsh declined to comment on Daisy's cause of death or any details from the scene on Thursday, citing pending conversations between law enforcement and her family to disclose that information privately. Welsh added, however, that police do not believe there is any outstanding danger to the public and that the incident at the Daisy's home was an isolated one. "There isn't any risk to the community at large if that's something people are worried about," Welsh said. Additional information will be available after Tyler Daisy makes his initial court appearance this morning. First-degree murder is a Class A felony in Iowa and carries a mandatory life sentence in prison if an individual is found guilty. Next, we have a large centerpiece picture of crews cleaning up on one of the downtown streets in Dubuque of snow. And it says beneath it, the caption is, "Cold cleanup. Dubuque City crews remove snow along Central Avenue in Dubuque on Tuesday." The National Weather Service said an approaching storm could produce 2 to 3 inches of snow and bitterly cold temperatures today. And it sounds like to me you've had a lot of snow up your way. Down here, we had a lot for us down here in Missouri, about 2 to 3 inches. But you've had an awful lot more and some terribly, terribly cold weather. So stay bundled up in the house. Now, on to our second piece. Mother charged in infant's death. A Dubuque woman faces charges in connection with the death of her infant son after police said he was found unresponsive last summer in a home unfit for children. Valessa T. Matlock, 24, of 3240 Getty Terrace, number 202, was arrested at 4:30 p.m. Wednesday at her residence on a warrant charging child endangerment leading to death, neglect or abandonment of a dependent person, and 2 counts of child endangerment. Police Department Lieutenant Brendan Welsh said child endangerment leading to death is a Class B felony in Iowa. A conviction is punishable by up to 25 years in prison, Welsh said. Court documents state that the 2-month-old was found unresponsive June 10th at the family's residence and subsequently was pronounced dead that day at Unity Point Health Findlay Hospital. Matlock told police she had swaddled the infant with a blanket at 11:30 p.m. June 9th, placing him on the living room couch while she went to sleep in her bedroom, documents state. When Matlock woke at 9, the infant had a blanket covering his face, and he was pale in color and not breathing. Matlock said she called her mother and then called 911. Matlock lived in the home with her live-in boyfriend and two other children, including a daughter who was then a year old. Documents state that the overall condition of the Matlock home was poor. The investigation shows that the living conditions of the apartment were not adequate for any of the children living there, documents state. Police also found signs of marijuana use within the apartment, documents state. Documents state that Matlock knowingly placed the infant and left him in a position which posed an immediate danger to him, which resulted in his death. Police found that the springs within the couch on which the infant had been placed were heavily damaged or non-existent, according to documents. This caused the couch cushions to sag significantly, according to documents. Anything set on the couch where the infant had been located would have immediately rolled down into the crevasses between the cushion. Subsequent autopsy results from the Iowa Office of the State Medical Examiner ruled that the infant's cause of death was positional asphyxia, documents state. Babies who experience positional asphyxia cannot breathe because the position of their body blocks their airway. During different interviews with Matlock, she provided conflicting statements as to how she had found the infant that morning, documents state. It was unclear if she had found him face down in the crevice between the cushions or if she had found him with his face covered by a blanket. Police said Matlock declined investigators' requests to reenact how she had put the infant on the couch and how she had discovered him. The Iowa Department of Health and Human Services requested that Matlock and her children submit to a drug panel test. Matlock and her one-year-old daughter tested positive for THC metabolite, documents state. Our third and final front page piece. Expert anticipates economic downturn. An economic expert on Thursday told a Dubuque crowd that he expects a slow start to the U.S. economy this year. Stephen Happel, professor of economics at Arizona State University, was the keynote speaker at Dubuque Area Chamber of Commerce's 2024 forecast luncheon. More than 250 people attended the event at Grand River Center. Happel stated that his assessment by state, rather he started his assessment by saying 2023 was a better year than many expected. Gross domestic product rose roughly 2.4%, and many ongoing supply chain disruptions were resolved. He still expressed fears, however, that an economic slump is on the way. Overall, this turned out to be a better year than a lot of people expected, Happel said. But I just don't see how we aren't going to have a slowdown, possibly a recession, in the year to come. Happel credited his concerns to the recent decrease in the U.S. money supply and a growing disparity between gross domestic product and gross domestic income. Such factors could contribute to a full-on recession, he said, though he expects it would be mild. Overall impacts will depend on the level and frequency of expected interest rate cuts from the Federal Reserve regulatory impacts from the upcoming election cycle and future spending habits of U.S. consumers, he said. For me, this decrease in the money supply is a real red flag, Happel said. But I'm still an optimist. So I always say to never underestimate the American consumer or the innovative side of the American public to address our problems. According to data from Blue Chip Economic Forecast, which Happel cited at the event, the 30 top forecasting firms expect average GDP increases of around 1.3%. in 2024, with maximum expectations of 2.4% growth to a minimum estimation of 0.6%. Apple said that range of figures expresses the high level of uncertainty facing the U.S. economy this year, part of which stems from the upcoming election cycle. Different candidates have varying economic policies, he said, which in turn would affect future economic regulation or deregulation, depending on which party controls Congress and White House. A lot depends on this election, he told the crowd. Happel then touched on issues of population and job growth. According to November data from Arizona State University, Iowa ranks 46th in the country in terms of year-over-year overall non-farm job growth, due in large part to minimal growth in industries such as service and government jobs. And Dubuque fares even worse than some of its other Iowa neighbors, he added, ranking 339th out of 361 metropolitan statistical areas nationwide with under 1 million jobs, according to ASU data. Overall, it's not a case of jumping for joy, he said. To begin to address that issue, Happel said Dubuque and smaller metros like it need to focus on population growth. In response to an audience member inquiring about how to do so, he recommended lowering taxes and eliminating onerous regulations. You also can't overlook the importance of having the attitude of, we are a vibrant community and we ought to take pride in Dubuque, he said. That sense of pride is important. The themes of population and job growth resonated with Molly Grover, Dubuque Area Chamber of Commerce President and CEO. After the luncheon, she reflected that those same themes underlie the chamber's efforts to promote patronage of local businesses. One thing that really stood out was how he said to never underestimate the power and influence of the consumer, Grover said. We talk all the time about buying local and supporting local to keep those dollars in the community, and the consumers, the people, have everything to do with that. Justine Paradiso, Vice President of Events and Programs at the Chamber, echoed Grover's sentiment and added that the forecast overall was meant to be a tool for area businesses as they planned for the year ahead. She also said Happel's appearance reflected the Chamber's efforts to broaden the annual luncheon's scope to include national economic impacts and expectations, as well as local and regional ones. The economy is an ever-changing thing, she said. Nobody can say for sure what will happen, sort of like a weather forecast. But you need to have some idea of what could potentially happen so you can factor that into what you hear and learn later on. Now we'll turn to some of our Dubuque and Tri-State news. Local man found not guilty of attempted murder. A Dubuque jury has found a man not guilty of attempted murder following a 5-day trial. Deron Sanchez Guzman, 27, of Dubuque, was charged in Iowa District Court of Dubuque County with attempted murder, willful injury causing serious injury, and going armed with intent. A jury Thursday morning found Guzman not guilty on all charges after 3 days of testimony. Dubuque County Assistant Attorney Josh Sims told the Telegraph Herald he is disappointed in the verdict. But that's why we have trials, Sims said. The jury examined all the evidence and apparently decided that they couldn't find him guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Guzman's defense attorney, Les Blair, declined to comment after the verdict. The trial began on January 10th, but was delayed due to severe winter weather. The jury began deliberating Thursday morning after closing arguments ended late Wednesday afternoon. The incident that led to the now-dismissed charges happened June 1st, when court documents state police responded to the area of Pennsylvania Avenue and Green Street and found Alberto Hernandez Avila, 32, of Dubuque, bleeding from the torso, saying he had been stabbed multiple times. Guzman was accused of asking Hernandez Avila to come to his apartment in the early hours of June 1st and stabbing him when he arrived. Charging documents also accused Guzman of commandeering Hernandez Avila's vehicle and chasing him, though Hernandez Avila was able to elude the vehicle. "This was an ambush," Sims said in his closing argument. "That's what all the data supports. That's what the testimony supports. That's demonstrated by all of this evidence." In Guzman's testimony Wednesday, he denied stabbing Hernandez Avila and instead said Hernandez Avila punched him several times during a fight in the apartment parking lot. He also denied driving Hernandez Avila's vehicle. When asked by Sims who could have instead been driving Hernandez Avila's car, Guzman testified he did not know. "No idea. In fact, I don't know how to drive. I don't have a license either," Guzman testified via a translator. In Blair's closing arguments, he emphasized that only Guzman's blood was found in the apartment parking lot where the fight happened. He questioned how Hernandez Avila could have been stabbed there multiple times without any blood hitting the ground. "Hernandez Avila told us that he was first stabbed in his back and then later in his stomach when his back was on the ground," Blair said. "So he falls on his back on the ground and there's no blood?" Iowa District Court Judge Thomas Bitter oversaw the proceedings and informed Guzman he would be released sometime Thursday. Next, we have another piece. Cascade Volunteer Fire Department hoping more people can contribute. The Cascade Volunteer Fire Department is looking for new volunteers to keep the city safe. Normally averaging 30 members, the department currently is down to 24, largely because of people leaving due to age or retirement after spending 15 years or more on the force. Fire Chief Bert Cray said several remaining firefighters are in the latter category and even more spots might need to be filled soon. "At our calls, we joke that it looks like there's 1,000 people running around, but soon it's going to only look like there's 40, which means there's going to be a lot of tired guys running around," he said. Cray said the goal is to get the roster back to 30 and even have a waiting list because no one can be expected to attend every call and training. "Even if I had 30 dedicated people, this is a volunteer deal, and everyone here has a full-time job and a life," he said. "If 75% show up to a call, that's considered amazing, because how do you get 30 people to be available at the same time?" The department ideally is looking for volunteers in their early 20s and 30s because it is the peak for most people in physical ability and gives them plenty of time to learn the tricks of the trade. The department also would be happy to have more women volunteer. However, Cray said people should not feel they are unable to join because they lack the body of an athlete. "Fighting a fire is a very strenuous activity, but if you're in average good health and have a willingness to be here, the willingness is the biggest deal," he said. "I have guys who are scared of heights and guys who don't like tight spaces. What you see on Chicago Fire isn't exactly what we need." Lead training officer Matt Donovan said that the most important part of a firefighter is the willingness to help, because every member can find at least one way to aid the team. "Your physical capabilities don't matter as much as your willingness to learn and find the niche that helps the entire team the most," Donovan said. We've had individuals in the past who weren't going to go interior, but that made sure everyone who went inside and came out were imminently taken care of. That was their best niche to assist all of us in accomplishing the mission. A large part of the department's work is crowd, traffic control, public education, and being present at crashes. There's nothing cooler than going to a school and teaching kids about fire prevention, said Cray. They think you're the coolest person on the face of the earth. Trainings are held every month with a focus on safety skills to meet standard and state requirements and improve muscle memory. On average, firefighters contribute 60 hours a year per volunteer. According to Donovan, there's a strong element of personal pride from a job well done after a call. It brings the feeling that anyone who competed on a sports team or did a performance in a drama or band has felt, Donovan said. When you get out and help the community, you have that feeling back. It's the euphoria of the win. For more information on joining the Cascade Volunteer Fire Department, contact the nearest firefighter, call City Hall, message the department on Facebook, or visit the monthly meetings on the second and fourth Thursday of every month. Now we turn to our opinion page, where today we have several letters to the editor. Our first one, uncivilized discourse now reigns. David Overby, Swiss Valley Road, Piasta. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me, goes the playground ditty. We know that's not true. Words bantered back and forth are a form of initiation on the playground, in the locker rooms, army barracks, hunting camps, in King of the Hill verbal fights to establish a pecking order among the wisecrackers and power brokers. If you can't handle it, you lose. This good-natured smarty pants banter has relatively recently begun to degenerate into a vicious anger way beyond basketball court trash talking. Note the universal meanness apparent in political TV ads. Some political influencers have taken this uncivilized discourse to a new level, so that today it is somehow now okay to be overtly nasty, breaking through the thin veneer of civilized society, to release an eruption of barbaric anger unprecedented in my lifetime. This degradation of others is no joke anymore. Unfortunately, the demonization of others does work, from the character assassination among the politicians to the derisive humor of late-night talk shows. Should we ignore the outrageous insults from the political goons? Would that not signal acceptance of this evil? Do we hurl insults back? Maybe this is what they may actually want, to be victims, and anyway, it just brings us down to their level. Or yearn for the good old days, when everyone laughed when someone fell from the schoolyard jungle gym onto the hard concrete, but then helped him up and took him to the school nurse. Court-appointed special advocates needed. Peggy Selnow, Iowa Child Advocate Board Program Coordinator, CASA of Iowa, Greater Dubuque Area, 7th Street, Dubuque. In this season, celebrating generosity, gratitude, and new beginnings, we urge everyone to consider the opportunity of volunteering in the new year with the Court-Appointed Special Advocate, CASA, program. As a CASA volunteer, you can truly make a difference for local children who have experienced abuse or neglect. Our volunteers receive training in child development, social services, juvenile justice system, and trauma responses. They regularly visit the child they are assigned to get to know them and their individual situations, working collaboratively with other key people on the case to ensure the child's best interests are being met. They then provide the court with knowledgeable recommendations to ensure the child's voice is heard during case decisions. CASA volunteers truly impact the lives of children and families. We invite readers to join our efforts in Dubuque County to advocate for local children. Call 563-207-7440 or visit casaiowa.org to learn more or to submit a volunteer application. Fear rising around school violence. David Patton, Graham Circle, Dubuque, Iowa. Sad to say, by January 4 of this year, there were already 4 school shootings that had taken place in this country, the latest being in Perry, Iowa. So while I don't like to admit it, it's just a matter of time before the same thing will be happening in Dubuque, especially with all the bullying that's taking place. After all, we've already had parents confronting other students for giving their child a rough time. Even when I ran for school board back in 2005 as the drug dog candidate, trouble was already brewing in the high schools. I even heard somebody say when I was making a run, the next thing we know, he'll want to have metal detectors in all the schools. Looking back in hindsight, maybe that wasn't such a bad idea after all. A saying also back when I was going to school in the 50s and 60s was, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never harm me. The only thing is, nowadays, things have changed drastically. So while sticks and stones still break bones, words spoken out of frustration and anger can permanently scar lives. Gee, isn't it strange? We spend billions of dollars on keeping physically fit, yet we are sorely neglecting to address mental health issues, the real cause for much of the violent crime in this country. Therefore, until we turn things around, we can expect to see even more school shootings taking place. And our final piece, do more to reduce plastic waste in 2024. Elaine Davis, Asbury Court Place, Asbury. Plastic never entirely goes away. Instead, it breaks down into smaller and smaller pieces known as microplastics. These microplastics are nearly everywhere, from clouds and ice over remote locations where industry does not exist, to the animals we eat, the water we drink, and the soil we grow our crops in. It's no wonder that microplastics are being found inside the human body. In reducing our reliance on plastics, addressing our plastic shopping bags could be a great place to start. There are many ways to do this. For example, you can use reusable grocery bags or paper bags instead. If you want to go bigger, write to local shops and ask them to discontinue their use. If you want to go for the gold, you can contact your legislators and town officials to advocate for them to be banned in our community. All actions, big or small, help. Little actions add up to significant impact. Remember, if you must use a plastic shopping bag, return it to the store for proper recycling. So join me in resolving to do more to reduce plastic waste in 2024. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by DUPACO and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. This is Ken reading from the Friday, January 19th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. We now turn to today's obituaries. Robert J. Breitfelder. Robert Joseph Breitfelder, 87, of Dubuque, died Sunday, January 14th at the Stonehill Care Center in Dubuque. Visitation will be from 1 until 4 p.m. Sunday, January 21st, at Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory. The Mass of Christian Burial for Bob will be 10:30 a.m. Monday, January 22nd, at St. Donatus Catholic Church, with Father David Ambrosi as the celebrant. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery in Dubuque. Military honors will be rendered by the American Legion Post No. 6. Robert was born October 26, 1936, in Lincoln, Nebraska, the son of Ferdinand J. and Bernice M. Breitfelder. On August 3, 1963, he married Mary Pat Ensler in Bethesda, Maryland. She passed away December 15, 2023. He received his bachelor's degree in math and engineering from Loras College. He was a member of U.S. Army Reserves from 1959 until 1965. Bob was an engineer at John Deere Dubuque Tractor Works. He was a member of St. Anita's Catholic Church, Knights of Columbus, John Deere Retirees, John Deere Corporation of Retired Employees, NAMI, and a Euchre and Gourmet group. He had a deep love of nature and art. His love of art carries on through his children and grandchildren. A memorial has been established for NAMI. Hoffman, Schneider, and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory is in care of the arrangements. A photo tribute can be viewed and condolences sent to the family by visiting Bob's obituary at www.hskfhcares.com. C. Wayne Pierce, Hazel Green. C. Wayne Pierce, 85, of Hazel Green, passed away Monday, January 15th at Unity Point Findlay Hospital in Dubuque. A memorial service with military honors accorded will be held at 11:30 a.m. on Saturday, January 20th at the Howden Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Cuba City. Burial will be held at a later date. Family and friends may call on Saturday, January 20th from 9:30 a.m. until the time of service at the Howden Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Cuba City. The Howden Shield Funeral Home and Cremation Services in Cuba City is serving the family. Wayne was born on June 4, 1938, to Clarence and Marjorie Scadden Pierce in Hazel Green. He was a graduate from Hazel Green High School. He married Glenda J. Glanville on June 25, 1960, at the United Methodist Church in Hazel Green. He was a U.S. Army veteran. He worked for over 47 years as a welder and maintenance worker for John Deere Dubuque Works. Wayne enjoyed fishing, farming, 1940s music, farming visits at his nephew Dennis's welding shop, having lunch with his friends at McDonald's twice a week, but most of all, he enjoyed time spent with his wife, Glenda, family, and friends. He will be sadly missed by all who knew and loved him. In lieu of plants and flowers, a C. Wayne Pierce Memorial Fund has been established. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.howdenshieldfuneralhome.com. Theresa Youngers. Sister Teresa Rita Ann Youngers, OSF 85 of Dubuque, died Tuesday, January 16th at the Clare House in Dubuque. The massive Christian burial will be held at Clare House Chapel, Mount St. Francis Center, at 1 p.m. Monday, January 22nd. Masks are optional. Guests unable to attend may participate via live stream at www.youtube.com/DubuqueFranciscans. Burial will be in Mount Calvary Cemetery. Teresa was born July 10, 1938, in Hospers, Iowa, to William and Petronella Stapenhorst Youngers. Teresa entered the Sisters of St. Francis September 3, 1960, and made final profession of vows August 12, 1968. Sister received her master's degree in reading from Clark College, Dubuque, Iowa. She ministered as a teacher in Illinois at North Riverside and Niles. Other missions included Sheldon, Iowa, Mount St. Francis Center, Dubuque, Iowa, and St. Louis, Missouri. Sister survived by her sister, Ellen Vortherms, her brothers, Arnold, Arnie, and others. The Sisters of St. Francis expressed their thanks to Hospice of Dubuque for their care and concern. Memorials may be given to the Sisters of St. Francis, Dubuque, Iowa. Hoffman, Schneider, and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory is in care of the arrangements. Shirley J. Yankee, Galena. Shirley Jean Yankee, 96, of Galena, passed away peacefully Sunday, January 14th at Galena Midwest Senior Care Community Center. The funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, January 22nd at the Furlong Funeral Chapel, Galena. Friends may call from 2 to 4 p.m. on Sunday, January 21st at the Furlong Funeral Chapel. The burial will be in St. Mary's Cemetery, Galena. She was born May 19, 1927, in Galena, the daughter of George and Gladys Coates Herman. Shirley graduated from Galena High School with the class of 1945 and Bayless Business College in Dubuque in 1946. She was united in marriage to John E. Yankee on May 20, 1950, at St. Mary's Catholic Church, Galena, and he preceded her in death on April 2, 1965. Shirley was the oldest living member of the First Presbyterian Church and served as secretary, sang in the choir, and taught Sunday school. Shirley was also a member of the Rebecca Lodge and the VFW Women's Auxiliary. Her claim to fame was being voted as Galena's Mardi Gras Queen, but her true calling was working with and teaching special needs children, which she did for 23 years. Shirley's greatest joy was her children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. She never hesitated to share with anyone who would listen how proud she was of all of them. Memorials may be made in Shirley's honor to either the Joe Davies County Workshop, Galena, or St. Jude's Children Research Hospital at www.stjude.org. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.furlongfuneralchapel.com. Carol Yadoff, Preston, Iowa. Carol Yadoff, 90, of Preston, died on Saturday, January 13th. Visitation will be held from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, February 3rd at St. John's Lutheran Church in Preston, where services will follow. Burial will take place in Preston Cemetery at a later date. Law Jones Funeral Home of Preston is assisting the family. Ruth A. Mergen, Prairie du Chien. Ruth A. Mergen, 84, of Prairie du Chien, died Tuesday, January 16th. Visitation will be held from 1 to 5 p.m. Sunday, January 21st, and from 9 to 11 a.m. Monday, January 22nd, at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Bloomington, where services will follow. Larson Funeral Home of Fenimore is assisting the family. Burdina A. Miller. A. Miller, 89, of Dubuque, died on Thursday, January 18th. Visitation will be held from 9 to 10:15 a.m. Monday, January 22nd, at St. Peter's Lutheran Church, where services will follow at 10:30 a.m. Eaglehoff and Casper Funeral Home, 2569 John F. Kennedy Road, is assisting the family. Trudy R. Vogt, Guttenberg. Trudy R. Vogt, 68, of Guttenberg, died Sunday, January 7th. Visitation will be held from 9:30 to 10:45 a.m. Saturday, January 27th, at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Guttenberg, where services will follow at 11 a.m. Inurnment will follow in Mount Olivet Cemetery in Guttenberg. Jerome A. Hafel. Jerome A. Hafel, 84, of Dubuque, died Wednesday, January 17th. Visitation will be held from 10 a.m. to noon, Saturday, January 27th, at Holy Ghost Catholic Church, where a massive Christian burial will follow. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, is assisting the family. Frederick K. Kohler, Cheryl. Frederick K. Fred Kohler, 87, of Cheryl, died Tuesday, January 16th. Private services will be held. Eaglehoff, Siegert, and Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road, is assisting the family. Richard J. Eisbach, Galena. Richard J. Eisbach, 86, of Galena, died Wednesday, January 17th. Arrangements are pending. Furlong Funeral Chapel of Galena is assisting the family. Robert J. Connolly. Robert Bob J. Connolly, 65, of Dubuque, died Wednesday, January 17th. Visitation will be held from 3 to 7 p.m. Monday, January 22nd at Leonard Funeral Home, 2595 Rockdale Road, and from 9 to 10:30 a.m. Tuesday, January 23rd at St. Joseph Catholic Church in Key West, where a mass of Christian burial will follow. And I do not see on the page any births, so we don't have any new arrivals for us today. The next piece is written by a high school student in Dubuque. And as a retired high school teacher, I think this is a wonderful piece that reflects some opportunities we need to give to more and more and more of our students. Something outside of the classroom that may be what they're interested in doing for a future. And this piece, called Wallert J-Term, provides intern opportunity at Telegraph Herald, was written by Teresa Kircher. It is a common belief among many that the standard high school education fails at preparing young people for the future. As a high school student, I am a witness to the truth of this. I have seen how seniors struggle to decide a path because they never had a chance to explore careers during their teen years. To combat this criticism, the administrators at my school, Wallert Catholic, developed a new opportunity for their students to build new skills and get experience in potential careers. This development was J-Term. During this, students are offered a wide selection of opportunities to participate in for the first 2 weeks of January outside of their regular coursework. For my J-term, I chose to be enrolled in the internship opportunity offered to upperclassmen. As someone who loves writing and recently joined the school's newspaper, I decided to intern at the Telegraph Herald. It was nerve-wracking for me. I was a junior with a single semester of journalistic writing experience being thrown into a newsroom full of professionals who work for a daily newspaper. Wallert's newspaper, The Gleaner, only publishes monthly. The first few days were overwhelming, but fascinating. I shadowed a variety of different interviews, ranging from one with a long married couple to another with a police investigator. I was able to sit in on team meetings where the next day's paper was laid out. Despite the stress that comes with the job, it was enlightening to see how positive the editors and reporters were. The atmosphere was so different from high school, where every inconvenience can feel like the end of the world. In journalism, the inconveniences are just part of the job. Since almost every person at the Telegraph Herald mentioned that no day is the same, it became obvious that this flexibility is essential to making it in the field. I experienced my share of unexpected difficulties. I came into the internship expecting the writing to be the hardest part. I was wrong. I was most unprepared for the hassle of getting in contact with potential interviewees over the phone. I think some of the stereotypes of modern teenagers are inaccurate, but it is true that the dominance of texting has made most of us very poor at making phone calls. I made the mistake of getting so flustered while trying to figure out a time to contact someone that I forgot the most essential part, writing down the times the person was available. I think if there is one class high schoolers need, it is a class on proper phone call etiquette, because I needed it. I was embarrassed by my mistake, but I tried to keep my head up by remembering there was no way I could learn without messing up a few times along the way. I was most thankful for all the supportive staff at the Telegraph Herald who were willing to take time out of their day to show me their responsibilities. Even though most had urgent tasks to do, they all took their time walking me through their process and giving me advice. By shadowing a large variety of people, I saw how many moving parts there are in a newsroom. Though many think of writing when they imagine journalism, the work of the editors, photographers, and graphic designers are just as essential to get the paper out every day. The experience made me realize that even if I will not be a reporter, there are many other careers related to journalism that could be a good fit for me. Outside of the things I learned about interviewing and writing, I think the most valuable thing I gained from this experience is resilience. Some days I felt out of my depth. I had to force myself to do things I did not want to do. There were a few small moments, like the disastrous phone calls, where I felt clueless and discouraged. But once I accepted that making mistakes was part of the process, I began to gain more confidence that no matter what I choose for my future career, I can persevere through any obstacle. Outside of deciding a career, I think giving high schoolers the opportunity to have an internship is more valuable for building persistence and self-esteem in young people. If teenagers get more experience solving problems, making mistakes, and facing new things head-on outside of the classroom, I think many of us would be more confident in exploring all possible paths, even if they scare us. We will never have everything figured out, but we would have a better idea of who we are, what we can handle, and what we excel at. I would give this young lady a big round of applause and kudos. A wonderful article, and something as a retired teacher I myself did do with students way, way back, but something I think is a wonderful, wonderful idea. She's right on, spot on with letting students get out there and try out some careers, see what they're interested in, what they would like to do. Okay, enough. I'm not supposed to editorialize on these things, but it was a wonderful article by this young lady. Now we'll turn toward our news in brief. Weather forecasters issue two advisories for expected snow, bitterly cold wind chills. Forecasters have issued a pair of advisories for Dubuque County and neighboring counties as another round of snow enters the region, followed by more bitterly cold temperatures. The National Weather Service has issued a winter weather advisory effective until 9 a.m. today for Delaware, Dubuque, Jackson, and Jones counties in Iowa, and Joe Davies County in Illinois. A wind chill advisory is in effect for Delaware, Dubuque, Jackson, and Jones County from 3 a.m. to noon today, and for Clayton County in Iowa and Crawford and Grant counties in Wisconsin from 3 a.m. to 9 a.m. today. The Weather Service said an approaching storm could produce 2 to 3 inches of additional snow in the area. Northwest winds gusting as high as 35 miles an hour could produce blowing and drifting snow and wind chill values as low as minus 25. Travel could become hazardous during the advisory time frame due to blowing snow and reduced visibility. Dubuque Street Storage Ordinance in effect. Dubuque police have issued a reminder about the city's street storage ordinance, a rule limiting the time a vehicle can be parked in one spot on a street. The ordinance prohibits vehicles from being parked on the street and not moved for more than 24 hours, according to a press release. Removal of parked vehicles is important for the completion of snow and ice removal operations, according to the release. Police actively are enforcing the ordinance, and vehicles that remain snowed in following the recent storms soon will be towed, according to the release. A violation of the ordinance could result in a $15 fine, as well as towing and administrative fees. Police, veiled threat made against a business. This is from Piasta. Police said there no longer is an active threat to the public after a veiled threat was made against a Dubuque County business. Law enforcement responded at about 2:10 p.m. Thursday to Mighty M Corporation, 50 Mighty M Drive in Piasta, for a veiled threat against the business, according to a press release from Piasta Police Department. The suspect in the incident was located out of state, and there is no longer an active threat to the business or the public.
No arrests were made, and the incident remains under investigation. Local nonprofit to host trivia fundraiser. A Dubuque nonprofit is set to host a trivia fundraiser in February. Registration is open for Opening Doors Trivia Palooza, which will be held February 29th at Grand River Center, 500 Bell Street. Doors open at 5:30 p.m. and trivia begins at 7 p.m., a press release states. The event will have an Irish theme and supports Opening Doors efforts to help women and children experiencing homelessness with housing options at Teresa Shelter, Maria House, and Francis Apartments. The entry fee is $20 for individual players or $225 for a sponsored team of 10. The team option includes a $25 tax-deductible donation. Pre-registration is preferred but not required. Those who want to attend can register at openingdoorsdbq.org/trivia. Equalization factor set for Joe Davies County, from Galena. Joe Davies County has been issued a final property assessment equalization factor of 1.0000, unchanged from last year's equalization factor for the county, according to a press release. The property assessment equalization factor, often called the multiplier, helps ensure property assessments are uniform among counties. The release states that the property assessment equalization factor is determined annually for each county by comparing the sales tax of individual properties sold over the past 3 years to the assessed value of those properties. According to the release, assessments in Joe Davies County are at 33.62% of market value based on sales of properties in 2020, 2021, and 2022. State law requires properties be assessed at one-third of their market value. And if they are above or below this amount, the equalization factor is adjusted down or up from 1. The new equalization factor is for 2023 taxes, which will be paid in 2024. Information sought about vehicle that hit snow pile, Patch Grove Township, Wisconsin. Authorities seek information about a vehicle that struck a snow pile and left the scene without stopping in Grant County. The incident occurred at approximately 9:30 a.m. Wednesday on U.S. 18 near the intersection with Grant County P in Patch Grove Township, according to the Grant County Sheriff's Department. A press release states that a Grant County Highway Department plow was clearing snow from the median in this area and had pushed snow into a pile on the west end of the median. Part of the pile was in the eastbound lane of US 18. The plow was waiting for traffic to clear before moving snow onto the shoulder of the road when an eastbound vehicle struck the snow pile and continued driving. The vehicle involved is likely a silver Kia sedan with moderate front end damage, according to the release. Anyone with information about the incident is asked to call the Sheriff's Department at 608-723-2157. Jigsaw puzzle event planned in Platteville, from Platteville. Platteville's library will host an annual jigsaw puzzle event next month. The third annual Jigsaw Puzzle Tournament will be held from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. February 4th at Platteville Public Library, 225 West Main Street, according to an online announcement. The event is free and limited to 12 teams of 1 to 4 people each. Each team will receive an identical 500-piece puzzle and will compete to finish the puzzle first. The event is geared toward adults and teens, but younger children may participate on a team. Galena Auction slated to aid hospital auxiliary, from Galena. Midwest Medical Center Auxiliary will hold a fundraising auction later this month. The 25-cent event auction will be held at 7 p.m. January 31st at Turner Hall, 115 South Bench Street, according to an online announcement. Registration is at 6 p.m. Bidding paddles cost $20. Call Connie Wienan, 815 541-9540 to reserve a spot. Light snacks will be provided. Participants should bring their own beverages. Now we'll turn to our weekend buzz, the things to do this cold weekend up there in the Dubuque area. Galena Roots opening reception today, Galena Center for the Arts, 971 Gear Street in Galena. 5 to 7 p.m., the opening exhibition features artists who, while no longer residents, have strong connections to the Galena area. Enjoy snacks, art, music, and conversation. Admission is free. Illuminate the Night Hike, New Wine Park. At New Wine Park, 16335 New Wine Park Lane in New Vienna. Sessions begin at 5:30 today and conclude at 7:30 p.m. A one-mile trail loop will be illuminated for a night of self-led hikes. Attendees can bring their own warm drinks to enjoy by a bonfire in the park before or after the hike. Dogs on leashes are welcome, and snow cleats or snowshoes are suggested depending on snow depth. Hiking groups will depart every 15 minutes, and groups are advised to choose their preferred time while registering. General admission is free, and you can get more registration information from tinyurl.com/NVNightHike. Kind of a big deal. Today, Mississippi Moon Bar, Diamond Joe Casino, 8 p.m. This five-piece group covers 40 years worth of classic rock and country hits. Must be 21 and over to attend. General admission is free. Dubuque Gun and Knife Show, Saturday and Sunday, Grand River Center, 500 Bell. Saturday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. This event is hosted by Pope Creek Shows. Cost is $8. All federal and local firearm laws and ordinances must be obeyed. Nixon, Saturday, Mississippi Moon Bar, Diamond Joe Casino, 301 Bell Street, 8 p.m. This three-piece group covers rock hits from the 60s to the 90s. Must be 21 and over to attend. Admission is free. General admission is free. Everything comes from planet Earth. Saturday, Mines of Spain Recreation Area and E.B. Lyons Interpretive Center. Noon, this program for ages 10 and over discusses sustainable living and how to positively impact our environment and ourselves. Registration is not required, that's but suggested. General admission is free. Information, tinyurl.com/planetearthmos. That wraps it up for this kind of chilly Friday. You have been listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by DuPaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. This has been Ken, reading down here in Missouri from the Friday, January 19th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And as I tell you every Friday, don't just listen to all of us on the news Monday through Friday. Tune in to all the other wonderful programs that are out there.